presents First Years, a podcast for all but geared toward adult first-time readers of Harry Potter, who need a space to enjoy each book and have adult conversations about it. My name is Sarah, and I'm honored that you've allowed me on this journey with you. Crack open a butterbeer, grab a seat, and let's discuss. Today, we're talking about the Black family and the Ministry of Magic. Welcome, everybody, to episode 49 of First Years. Today, we are going over chapters 6 and 7 of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. So these chapters are really important because they bring us into the daily life in number 12 Grimmauld Place, and also gives us the lead up into Harry's hearing, which has been long anticipated pretty much since chapter 1. And one of the first things that I want to point out is when Harry calls Ron out for flinching when he says Voldemort's name. So this is after they get to sit in on the meeting and they're discussing everything that they heard. And I think this just shows how ingrained it is in the wizarding culture to be afraid of Voldemort, especially now that Ron knows he's back. Not that he ever questioned it, but it's like, it's one thing to be scared about saying the name and have that person not be around, and it's another thing to be scared of the name and to know that that person is back. Sirius and Lupin do call Voldemort by his name, but they've also been around longer, and they've fought against Voldemort before, and who knows how long it was for them to get over the shock of the name, if they were ever scared of it before. I think it just shows how still, even however many years later, Voldemort's legacy and his influence and the fear he instills in everyone is very much present. Fred and George join them to discuss what was said at the meeting, and they speculate about what could be the weapon. And they go to the worst case scenario, which is essentially that it's used to probably kill people, but it has to be something worse than the killing curse. And there's a line that sticks out to me where George says, quote, "So who do you think's got it now?" And Ron says, quote, "I hope it's our side." Because how terrifying, not really knowing who is in control of this weapon. I mean, we don't even know if the Order already has it and is protecting it, or if it's in Voldemort's possession and they're trying to get it away, or if neither side has it and they're just trying to ensure that the other side doesn't get to it first. And it even creeps into Harry's dreams. You know, he dreams about weird creatures in a class with Hagrid that are called weapons. So it's definitely on everybody's mind. Then the next day, they end up doing what Sirius has been doing all summer, which is cleaning out the house. Creature apparently hasn't been living up to his duties as a house elf, which Hermione tries to defend him because he's old, but Sirius ensures her that there's a lot that Creature can do. What are your first impressions of Creature? He's the third house elf that we've met so far in this series. We met Dobby in book 2, and we met Winky in book 4, and now we're meeting Creature. We meet him after they finish off the doxies, which we will talk about in a second, but he comes in and clearly he's very old and not taking care of himself, which might be a good question. Are house elves even allowed to take care of themselves? Or is this just what happens when they get old enough? He talks to himself and also voices his thoughts loud enough so that others can hear. He calls Mrs. Weasley a blood traitor, he laments about his mistress, Sirius's mother, not being around, and how they've completely ransacked and defiled her home with all of these blood traitors and mudbloods. And Hermione tries again to stick up for him, but Fred tells Hermione that he knows exactly what he's saying. And this is probably true, right? He worked for a pureblood family just like the Malfoys, and although Dobby didn't subscribe to those beliefs, I'm sure there are some elves that absolutely do, just like Creature does. Creature also gives us some background information about Sirius, saying that he broke his mother's heart, and we'll talk about Sirius later in this episode. But that's no small thing, meeting Creature. House elves so far in this series have actually had something to do with the plot, even though in the wizarding world, they're supposed to be background characters that clean and organize behind the scenes. So what do you think we'll see from Creature in this book? Also, we get a mention of Buckbeak, who is living here with Sirius, so if anyone was worried, Buckbeak is okay, hanging out and hiding with Sirius. Although I do wonder if Buckbeak needs any exercise or anything. It's not like Sirius can just take Buckbeak outside. If the owls aren't allowed outside every night, I'm sure Buckbeak probably can't ever be outside. Because Creature isn't doing his duties, our main characters have to do it, and it surprised me that they're allowed to handle doxies. Because these creatures are poisonous. Are there professional exterminators or whatever in the wizarding world? I feel like there must be, and this seems like a job for them. And, you know, actually, they probably can't hire someone like that because this is headquarters and they can't just let anyone in it, right? But still, this seems like a job for older wizards and not teenagers. What do you guys think? If we look at Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, there is a brief section about doxies. And it says that doxies are often mistaken for fairies, but it is a separate species. And it says that doxies are found throughout Northern Europe and America, preferring cold climates, and they lay up to 500 eggs at a time and bury them, and then the eggs hatch in 2 to 3 weeks. And it says, doxies have double rows of sharp, venomous teeth. An antidote should be taken if bitten. And they have a classification of XXX, which means that competent wizards should cope. I feel like they mean people that have graduated school and not, you know, 15-year-olds. But who knows? So again, what do you guys think? If you remember, Harry gave Fred and George his winnings from the Triwizard Tournament last book, and we're finding that they're putting it to good use. They're developing what are called skiving snack boxes to help people skip class. They've been advertising in the Daily Prophet, and they're trying to find a good place for a physical storefront, which is really cool, and I'm really glad that Fred and George are actually using the earnings, and I'm excited to see what these skiving snack boxes are like. I want to circle back to Sirius and Creature now. Creature has been trying to save certain things from getting thrown out in their cleaning process, and he's worried about a tapestry, which it seems like Sirius's mother decided to put another permanent sticking charm on the back of it so that it can't be removed. So just like with her portrait, what does this say about her and this family? And this is interesting. Creature has been taking orders from Sirius's mother's portrait, which maybe that's why she put a permanent sticking charm on her portrait. So even after she was gone, she'd still be in control of her own household. What do you guys think? With this tapestry, we get our first look at a pureblood family line. It goes all the way back to the Middle Ages, which is actually before Hogwarts was founded, if my Google searching was correct. And that isn't a spoiler, it's extra information that we don't get in this series. So here's a question for you. What do you think wizards were doing before Hogwarts was founded? The Black family motto is toujours pure, which means always pure in French, and I'm sure you can guess what that means. And Sirius was on the tapestry but got blasted off when he ran away from home at 16 and went to James's house. Sirius's uncle was also blasted off, and so was Tonks's mother Andromeda, who was Sirius's favorite cousin. But before we dive into that side of the family tree, we have to talk about Sirius's brother, Regulus. He's dead and died kind of around the same year Harry was born, since it says about 15 years previous. He joined the Death Eaters and was murdered by Voldemort, or on his orders, and Sirius says that he got in pretty far, panicked, and then tried to back out. And that's interesting because we haven't really heard of that before, right? We usually hear about Death Eaters that are still Death Eaters, and are psyched to be part of Voldemort's ranks. So it's interesting to hear about someone who got in and was like, oh wait, get me out of here. What do you guys think is the significance of that? Sirius has quite a lot of awful family members. We already know this about his mother, but we also learn that his great-great-grandfather was a headmaster of Hogwarts and was the least popular one. Then you have his mother's cousin who tried to make muggle hunting legal, and an aunt that created the tradition of beheading house elves. Sounds like a really great group of family members to have. And so we learn that Sirius is related to Tonks, the Auror that we've been introduced to in this book, and he's also related to the Malfoys and the Weasleys. So the Weasleys and Andromeda Tonks seem to be the only good relatives that he has. Everyone else, we know where they stand, like the Malfoys. This reminds me of like royal family lines, where royal family members would just intermarry in order to keep their line as pure and as royal as possible. It's the same thing here with purebloods. What does that say about them? And the fact that they're so celebrated within this world. From our perspective, we see how these characters don't have the best intentions for everyone in the wizarding world and think they're better than others. And we've seen how many of them are supporting the main evil villain in this storyline. But there's a reason people like the Malfoys and the Blacks think they're better than everyone else, and why there's a divide among wizards of different blood statuses. What does that say about the world and where purebloods stand within it? And the fact that purebloods that decide not to be racist and celebrate others and intermarry with people who don't have the same blood status are called blood traitors. We spoke before about how Harry and Sirius both had miserable summers, but now we get a sense that this house is as miserable for Sirius as Privet Drive is for Harry. Sirius is clearly in exile from the family because his morals are better, and he accepts all people regardless of their blood status, and he has to deal with having all of these people as his family. It has to be tough. He ran away, and now he's stuck back here with his mother that can't be taken down from the wall, and whatever the house is filled with, and probably all of the tough memories of growing up within this household, before he decided that he couldn't take it anymore and ran away to James Potter's house. However, it's a perfect place for the headquarters because it's so well protected, which I suppose makes it worth it, but probably doesn't make it any easier. Although, maybe it could be a little satisfying knowing that he's getting revenge on what his family stood for by supplying it to the Order. And it's here that we learn about secret keepers, which were mentioned before, and we'll talk about that in a second. But it says that nobody can find the headquarters unless Dumbledore tells them personally where it is, which means that it was probably Dumbledore's handwriting on the piece of paper when Harry first arrived. No one else could tell him where it was. That's a bit of cool magic. And this has been mentioned before, this idea of secret keepers. This is how James and Lily were betrayed, because Sirius was supposed to be the secret keeper originally and keep their hiding place a secret. And Sirius decided to convince them to make it Wormtail instead. And we know how that worked out. But now we know exactly how it works, which I think is really interesting. So if you needed a secret keeper for something, who would your secret keeper be? They spend the rest of their time leading up to the hearing working on clearing out the house, which it's true, it's a full-time job and hard work. And Harry says that he's actually having fun, as long as he's busy. This scary thing is hanging over his head, and while he's occupied enough to not think about it, he's okay. But once the chores die down and he has more time to think about it, and stress about it, and worry about it, and be scared about it, that's when things get really tough. He's too terrified to even voice the idea that he might end up expelled. It's just too horrifying of a thought for him to go through. And he's determined that, worst case scenario, he's going to live back at Grimmauld Place, and is not going to go back to the Dursleys if he's expelled. Which makes sense, right? I don't see any reason for him to go back to the Dursleys if he is expelled, because then he would just be miserable forever until he could move out of Privet Drive. And that doesn't seem very fair when Sirius says that this house is literally the safest place. And so his hearing finally creeps up at the end of this first chapter that we're going over. Mr. Weasley is going to bring him, and as they're explaining that plan and that Sirius can't come, we find out that Dumbledore stopped by the headquarters, and he didn't speak to Harry. Dumbledore is someone in this series that we trust, right? He's a character that we feel safe around, and we know that he was at the Ministry the night of the Dementor incident, and he was handling things. And yet, I'm sure Dumbledore must know that this is a terrifying thing for Harry to face, and yet doesn't take the time to stop by and speak with Harry the night before his hearing. What do you think that means? In the following chapter, we get introduced to the Ministry of Magic. The morning of the hearing, Harry is nervous. Who can blame him? We find out that he's going to be questioned by Amelia Bones, who is the head of the Department of Magical Law Enforcement. That's pretty intimidating in and of itself, but Tonks assures Harry that, you know, she's a fair-minded person, so it isn't completely a bad thing. What I think is really cool about this chapter is that we get to see how visitors enter the ministry, and we get a close look at it for the first time. We've heard about the ministry for a while now, but we haven't been able to step inside it yet in these books, and so I think this is a really cool and important location for us to get a look at. And just like how Grimmauld Place is hidden in plain sight, so is the ministry. The visitor's entrance is hidden within a telephone box and brings them right down to the atrium. The thing that really stands out to me here, though, and which I think says a lot about the ministry itself, is the statue of the witch, wizard, centaur, goblin, and house elf. The text specifically says that these other creatures are, quote, looking adoringly up at the witch and wizard, unquote, which just gives me ugh vibes. And it isn't subtle at all. Wizards don't like magical creatures or beings, anyone that isn't a wizard, really. We've seen this time and time again. And this gives sort of like a savior look to the wizards and witches, and it's pretty uncomfortable, especially since it's called the Fountain of Magical Brethren. And, you know, that title gives more of an image of like companionship, like of mutual respect. But the statue says otherwise. Although the fountain collects money for St. Mungo's Hospital, which is a good thing. And Harry promises that he'll put 10 galleons in if he gets off. And I like that last-ditch effort to get the best outcome. You can feel how desperate Harry is and how nervous he is, and he's like, I don't care, I'll put 10 galleons in, just please get me off these charges. It's almost like a little prayer to whatever higher power to help him out of this situation, and I think that's really realistic and relatable. As Mr. Weasley takes Harry to his office, they take the elevator, and we get to hear about all the different departments and offices in the ministry, which I really like because I'm so curious as to what the day-to-day is in those offices, like the Ludicrous Patents Office or the Broom Regulatory Control Office. We see the interdepartmental memos zooming in and out of the elevators too, which is really cool. And then we get to see the Order of the Phoenix in action when we arrive on Arthur Weasley's floor. We run into Kingsley Shacklebolt, and he and Arthur have to pretend that they hardly know each other, and they're just both, you know, very impersonal co-workers. And we see Kingsley in charge of Sirius's whereabouts, even though he knows full well where Sirius Black actually is. When they walk into Arthur's office, it's pretty small. But did you catch the detail about how Mr. Weasley's family photo is missing Percy? His photograph self decided to walk out of the picture. So how connected are the personalities of the people in photographs with the real people they're based on? Is there constantly a link between them? Where is photograph Percy in the meantime? Does he just disappear? Does he wait elsewhere? Where does he go? And while we're here, all ready for a relaxing wait until the hearing, Arthur's coworker comes and frantically tells them they changed the time and the location of the hearing, and no one notified them about it. So now they have to rush down to the Department of Mysteries, and we run into a man named Bode, who Mr. Weasley pointed out in Goblet of Fire as an unspeakable. And so they're rushing down to this courtroom, and Mr. Weasley says that he's not allowed into the courtroom. So Harry has to go in by himself. And that's where we leave off this chapter. Eek, cliffhanger! So what do you think is in store for us for the hearing? Let me know at firstyearspodcast@gmail.com, or you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at firstyearspod. For next episode, you have to read chapters 8 and 9. We have Creating Magic's Danny and Steven joining me again, which is always really exciting, and I will see you guys next time. First Years is a production of Matchbook. It's produced by Quinn Parker and myself, Sarah Jones-Dittmeyer. All sources can be found in our show notes or on our website at authorsarahjonesdittmeyer.info/firstyearspodcast. That's Sarah with an H, and Dittmeyer is spelled Dittmeier. Please remember that staying a Harry Potter fan is the biggest form of revolt that you can have, and we are committed to continuing to make this fandom and this community safe and welcoming to everybody.